Welcome to the Charting Life podcast, where we explore life's uncharted territories through meaningful conversations and always with a healthy dose of laughter. So before we get into this episode, I do want to make sure that ask that you interact with the episode, because this will enhance the experience. It builds community and helps with the algorithms as well. So if something catches your attention where you have a thought or a story you want to share, enter that in the comments. That helps quite a bit, the liking, the subscribing. And if at some point in this episode, something reminds you of somebody that you know, go ahead and share that with them individually. I think that helps quite a bit as well. So without further ado, if I can talk correctly, today we have with us Catherine Cowell. Catherine's a spiritual director and facilitator of gatherings and retreats. She believes that God can be found in the busyness and chaos of ordinary life and is passionate about creating hospitable places where people are free to be themselves and to express diverse views and perspectives. She often finds herself accompanying people whose spiritual lives have taken unexpected twists and turns and who need space to be honest about their doubts and questions and about where their journey is leading them. Started your career as a speech and language therapist. I'm going to slow down a little bit and I'm okay with having some of my oopses in there without even editing, because that's just how this really is. So she started her career as a speech and language therapist, a job which you did for 20 years. While there, you led a number of teams and managed departments for several years. Then you trained as a life coach, working mainly with Christians, setting up innovative missional projects. And alongside of that, led a small church community that, among other things, reached out to homeless people and provided safe space and people out clubbing on a Friday night. Catherine is an adoptive parent and supports and mentors parents of children with additional needs, helping them to integrate relational, therapeutic, and parenting with spirituality. This is quite a bit. This is a very impressive resume you have here as well. Currently studying for a PhD, researching the experience of additional needs parents with spirituality. You're also the host of the Love Called Gifted podcast, which explores stories and ideas on the theme of spirituality, identity, and purpose. And if you fancy a listen, you can find the podcast basically in most podcast arenas and on the lovecalledgifted.com website. You've also authored books Church Uncorked and Love Called Gifted, which you co-authored with Sean Kennedy, exploring themes of leadership and life calling. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I've just written another book, which I'm very excited about, called Finding God's Feminine Side. So yeah. I'd add that to the author list. But I think other than that, Brandon, that's pretty comprehensive. So thank
Fantastic.
You.
Fantastic. And before we were recording, I was saying that I was able to read or listen to most of it. And just for a very quick, fun question, as an author, does it make a difference to you if somebody reads the book or listens? There's a big debate over if listening to an audiobook counts as reading. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I'm just really delighted if somebody reads it, listens to it, whatever works for them. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that's fantastic. I, bit of the history nerd in me would say, you know, originally one person might read, but everyone else listens. So that's kind of how stories and books were often communicated, was through audio. So I'm happy with whichever one and as well. So as long as you retain the information and you're able to actually get, especially if it's a nonfiction book and you're able to kind of get the full experience, whatever works, I think is fantastic.
Yeah, some people are definitely readers. Other people mm-hmm. are definitely more audio, and some people aren't going to do it unless I make a film version.
Right.
So, so not planning to do that, but you know what I mean.
Well, you never know, documentaries or, you know, things might, who knows, but I understand that. Okay. So let's do, I guess, a brief background introduction so our guests can kind of get to know you a little bit. What was your family life growing up? And do you have a fun story or a very memorable part of childhood that the kind of brings to mind today?
I had a blessedly ordinary childhood. So there was me, my two parents. They worked, but they didn't work stupid long hours. I had a sister who was sort of 4 years younger than me. And then when I was 12 and a half, we had a third sister who came along who had quite profound learning difficulties. Mm-hmm. So she now lives in sheltered accommodation. You know, I think it was blessedly ordinary. So my mum worked a couple of nights a week when I was quite small as a mm-hmm. geriatric nurse, and then she was a psychiatric nurse. And that meant that while she was sleeping at the weekends, my dad looked after us. Mm-hmm. So I think we had a pretty balanced childhood. and pretty ordinary. And I say that partly because I know that that isn't everybody's experience, and
Right.
I really know what a blessing that's been. I was trying to think of funny stories, and that's always tricky, isn't it?
Sure.
I used to have a little tricycle, and I used to love my little tricycle. I would ride it up and down mountains in Wales and all over the place. I think that was one of my favourite things when I was small. And on your list, you didn't specifically say funny story.
Sure.
And I was thinking what was kind of significant for me. And actually, what was really significant for me is that I had an aunt who was perhaps 8 years older than me, so kind of at the next stage of life, but not proper kind of old auntie aunt. And she was going to university when I was growing up, and she was the first person in our family who had been away to college. And I really enjoyed school, and I really enjoyed learning. And her role modelling of going away to university was really significant for me. I just assumed that I would, and I had no particular reason to. Nobody else had. And I think that was one of the things that kind of helped to shape my life.
Yeah, that's great. I know. I think it was kind of interesting. So this may even be a topic we might explore a little bit. But my wife's mother, well, my wife was one of four daughters, and so her mom basically was very intentional about raising every single one of their daughters as live. Don't feel like you have to be trapped under the patriarchal structure to some degree. Like you can live in. She basically wanted them all to be independent, and then that way they can make whatever choice they wanted to in life. Because, my wife's her parents were older, her grandparents were older when they had them, and so they're like. So, for example, my wife's grandfather, who passed away before she ever met her, he was too old to fight in World War II. So it's just kind of interesting how how much some of that stuff shapes and shapes us, and even through generations of our family too. But that's one thing I always really appreciate about my mother-in-law, was that she wanted to make sure her daughters weren't, they had whatever choice they wanted to. And so the part of that was education. And I think that's a really big deal. And I know we're kind of jumping almost into the deep end right away. So let's kind of swim to shore for a minute moment before we go back out there as well. And I do like to ask sometimes about traveling experiences. Have you had much travel experience, or have you been pretty much locally for most of your life?
I have done bits and pieces of travel. One of the most significant bits of travel that I did was going to Kosovo about 10 months after the war finished.
Okay, yeah.
So if you know that there was a genocide of the sort of Kosovars in Kosovo, the Muslim folks. And when we got there, all of the Serbians' houses had been burnt out, presumably in retaliation for the fact that there had been genocide. So it'd all been quite a mess. And we went and did kids' work and stuff, and organised games and things for local children. And we were doing this on a kind of a piece of sort of waste ground near where there was an enormous hole that had been dug, with the intention that this is where we will put the people that we shoot. And they hadn't got to that. But there was a mum there with a couple of small children just watching. They were just stood there watching these games going on. And we went and had a conversation with her and said, would your children like to join in? She said, no. I just wanted them to see children playing because they haven't seen that in their lives yet,
Right.
which blew us away, really.
Yeah, so things we take for granted, absolutely. That is that's a pretty big deal. The fact that they had never seen any children playing, so that's tough.
So that's a travel experience I've
Yeah,
remembered.
absolutely. And that's one of those ones I think will definitely stick with you for quite some time as well. So today, I want to, again, there's so many different ways we can go with the conversation today. And I absolutely love that. But I think we're going to first start off with the idea of calling, maybe a little bit based off of your podcast, Love Called Gifted. What got you into that, I guess, desire for pursuing this as either not just as a podcast, but also as an interest for yourself? So what got you started in that journey?
It was sort of two tracks of things running at once. One was being very aware that if you're part of an organisation or a church in particular, there is quite a tendency for those things to be run in a way which sort of says, we have somebody, there's somebody at the front, usually a bloke, who has a vision. And the idea is that you work out which part you're going to play in this grand vision, which is fine if you've got a passion and a calling that fits with that. But it's not so good if you don't. So I was doing some work with a friend of mine called Sean Kennedy, who I ended up writing some books with. And I'd got a gig doing facilitating a meeting for a local church, and they wanted to talk about how are we going to reach our local council estate? How are we going to reach the people around us? And I spoke to my friend and colleague Sean and said, will you come and run this workshop with me? And his awkward answer, I do like people who ask awkward questions and have awkward perspectives because it
Yes.
so often opens things up. And he said, yeah, but what if those people are not called by God to be reaching people on their local housing estate? And I said, well, yeah, I know, but I've told the vicar I will do this. You know, I've said to the pastor, I can do the session. I've got the flip charts, I've got the marker pens. And he said, yeah, but what if they're not called? And I thought, oh, darned, you're right. What we need to be doing is helping people to understand what is it that God is calling me to do, whether that absolutely aligns with what my church is doing or not. And so we did a session for a number of people, and one of the questions that we asked people was, what is it that gives you life and energy? And over coffee before we'd started, I'd had a chat with this woman who spoke very passionately about a couple of things. She was very committed to church, but she was really passionate about being a local magistrate and talked about that with huge enthusiasm. And the other thing she'd talked with huge enthusiasm about over coffee before we'd started was hosting people in her home. So having meals and inviting people round and making sure everybody had a good time. And she was so animated when she was talking about this. And then we'd given everybody the sheet to think of all the things that you do, what gives you life and what drains you? So she went and hid in the kitchen to make tea for everybody. So I went and found her and sort of said, I'm just wondering if you're having a bit of trouble answering these questions. She said, well, there's nothing in church that I enjoy doing. There isn't anything that gives me life. And I said, well, what about being a magistrate? Oh, I love being a magistrate, she said. I said, well, you can write that down in the this gives me life column. And then I said, so what about entertaining people and having people round and hosting them? She said, oh, that's just my guilty pleasure. It was one of those sort of seminal moments. And what I realized was that she had dismissed things that God had evidently called her to do. And hospitality is so key as Christians. It is so key to who God is. It is not, it's not a marginal Christian activity, but because it wasn't on the church list of these are the jobs you ought to be doing, she had missed it. So that was one of those moments. And Sean and I had done quite a lot of thinking and writing and researching about how do you help people to understand what they are called to do. And we thought, well, and what we wanted to do was start from who are you? And our primary calling is that we are loved by God. That's it. So being in that relationship of love, being loved is our primary calling. And then from that, we can work out who we are. But that emerges from relationship and from who we are. So that gives you your loved. Called, and then we are your calling is the passion that you have for what it is that you want to change in the world. And then the gifting is the thing which helps you to work out how you're going to do something about the thing that you're passionate about in the world. But it needs to start with knowing that you're loved. So that was the beginning of quite a lot of the coaching and the training that we did with people. Alongside some helping leaders to think about how do I organize something in a way that means that I'm not imposing a structure. What I'm doing is helping people to listen to the Holy Spirit and see what really interesting stuff emerges from that. So that was where the loved, called, gifted thing came from. And then when I was looking for a podcast, it was still absolutely speaking to the stuff that I wanted to explore and continue to think about.
Well,
So
that
yeah.
is Yeah, thank you for sharing that. There's, I think, so many things within there that are definitely worth addressing. One, the idea of being loved, called, and gifted. There's a lot of interplay between those, and I think,
Absolutely.
and I do like that you mentioned you start with loved. That is a that's a really big deal. I know part of my story, which I am beginning to share and learn how to share it, I guess, a bit more effectively, is I had, from a very early age, on one side of family of extreme love and acceptance, and the other side of, well, I don't know if you would call it hatred as much as not loved and not valuable enough to be, to be worth being around, that sort of thing. And so I had that very sharp division, quite a bit. I had a class in seminary once that wanted us to attempt to interpret your life through one of the characters of the Bible. Jesus was not allowed because, that's for probably obvious reasons. And I thought there were some, there were some characters of the Bible that were kind of more my favorite that I thought would have gone with that. But I ended up landing on Joseph, which was really fantastic because, for as far as how that connects to me, his father and his mother, as well, they loved him deeply, but his brothers did not love him very much. Just to put it very nicely, his brothers are very much against him. And for anyone who's not familiar with the story, you can go be able to read it in the latter half of Genesis. And his brothers basically were going to kill him, but one of his older brother had a little bit of sense and said, "Let's at least just spare his life by selling him into slavery." And God did wonderful things through Joseph, even though he had a very rough life through that. And so, as far as that, for me, I've recently come to the part where I can kind of harmonize both parts of myself, the part that was loved and the part that was not seen as valuable enough to stick around for. And I've been able to kind of harmonize that and understand that I am loved and I am valuable enough just in my own right. And that's even, before we get into, theology of the Imago Dei, where God is, we're creating God's image too. But I'm starting to see where that is. Where I have value, not just in what I do or I'm able to produce. And that has been very life-changing for me. And that's even just over the last few weeks where I've really been able to start connecting those dots in a way that is very fruitful. And so again, I like how you said you start with loved, knowing that you're loved, and then you can go into calling and giftedness. And I believe that there's probably several, for many people, there's several stops along their journey where they maybe have to go back to one or the other ones. They got maybe need to go back to the part reminding that they are loved and that they can and should be loved. And then perhaps, I don't know if this what your thoughts on this or not, but perhaps calling can change at some part, at some point in life, where whatever it is that you may be called to, that can either shift in what that looks like, or that may even change entirely depending on how your life goes. What are your thoughts on that part of the calling?
Oh, definitely. I think that what we're called to do does definitely shift and change as we shift and change. So I don't think that there is one moment for most people. There are some people who have kind of a one moment of this is the thing that I'm meant to do for the rest of my life. But most of us, I think it's a lot messier than that and a lot less linear. So definitely, I think that shifts and changes.
And I, that's one of those things that I do, I very much love about God, is he gets into the mess with us. And we understand that life is very rarely clean cut, and it's more often messy than not. And then, again, I love that God comes in the middle of that as well. Let me ask you a question. And my wife said I had permission to say that it is her in this. I always want to make sure I honor that and ask, is it okay if I share this particular aspect about your life or not? And she's always felt like one that she just never felt like she was called to do anything. She never really could find that. And she's a brilliant person, but when it came to calling or what you're supposed to do when you're in high school, there's a really big push of figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life by the time you're 17, 18 years old. And there was some test that she took where at her school, and part of that test said that, well, your best bet is either going to be a plumber or a fish cutter. And like, okay, that is interesting. So what in the world did that come from? And she's, of course, if she wanted to do either one of those, she could, but she is absolutely brilliant and could do pretty much anything that she wanted. So she's never felt that intense, drive or desire, or even that just that calling, however you would call that, about the you know, it's interesting. One of the best things that she always felt is she just wanted to be a, you know, to be a mother. And a wife can really kind of lean into that. And then, but as far as, you know, life being messy, in her mind, her vision, she had plenty of kids, as long as multiples of two, like two, four, six, whatever. That's how she wanted it. But we only ever were, you know, we were able to have one child. And so that there's plenty of times along life that we've had to shift what our expectations were, what our thoughts were, and, you know, as far as just based upon what reality is showing. But I know she just said that she never really felt there was a calling to do anything in particular. And for a long time, she just felt broken because everyone felt like they had some kind of calling. And it took her a little while to realize, even now she doesn't have that strong sense of calling, although she does have plenty of giftedness to her. But, and I would, there again, there's a couple of different ways we can go with that. But if somebody's struggling with calling, do you think their giftedness, it might indicate their calling, or is that something that should always come after?
I think things often go in more than one direction. So it's always a bit of a it's a puzzle, isn't it? And you can find your way through it. And one of the things that quite often gets in our way is that we have a or we're given a fairly kind of clear sense of what it means to be called. And actually some of what it means is not it's not necessarily kind of a big long-term thing. I think quite often it's about attending to what is it that I'm passionate about. What is it that I want to do? Because quite often our desires are things that God has placed within us. And going back to that earlier question, what is it that gives me life? You know, what is it that helps me to feel alive? And not everybody has, I could stick this on my office door kind of calling. You know, I am pastor, doctor, nurse. So sometimes it's more about the kind of person that you are. So these days, I would say that a really core part of who I am is that I am somebody who sits and listens to people and has really good conversations. That's not going on anybody's door.
A pretty long, you know, title plaque to put on there.
It would be, and it also doesn't kind of it doesn't fit. So sometimes it's about thinking, okay, so what is it that I really care about? What are my values? And am I going to make sure that what I'm doing is in line with what is really important to me? Sometimes for some people, I think that particularly being a woman in a patriarchal society, even if we've had family that have been really good at helping us not to feel squished by things, that we are a bit enculturated into tending towards helping other people out rather than working out what we want to do, I think. So yeah, I mean, I'd love to sit down and have a coffee with her, but I am intrigued. But who she is not broken. Who she is beautiful and imaging God, in all that she does. And there are no rules about finding what your identity and your calling is. I think it's different for everybody. And it generally comprises a number of different things that sort of come together for us. So something which is motivating, that you kind of have an intrinsic motivation towards, something which you can get better at that you really enjoy. Something that you can do in community with other people, something which has a deep sense of meaning for you, and something where you sense that you are contributing to something that's greater than yourself. And if you've got all five of those going on, then you are likely to absolutely be in your sweet spot.
Absolutely. And would you mind mentioning those five one more time? I just want to make sure I put an emphasis on those.
And I can't promise to do them in the right order.
Sure, no problem.
Something that you are good at, something that you can develop mastery for, something which you enjoy getting better at. And then secondly, something which is motivating for you that kind of gets you up in the morning. You think, no, I really like to do this. Something which has meaning beyond beyond sort of something which is meaningful. It feels like it's going to make a meaningful difference to the world. Something which feels like you're contributing to something which is bigger than you are. Is that four? And I think my
I
last one
think
was about
so.
community. I might not have, they might not be exactly the same, the five in exactly the same order, but those are pretty key, I would say.
And I would imagine maybe if you can't find all five of those, if you can find a cross section or intersection between two, three, four of them, then you're probably in a pretty good place. Is that about right?
Yeah, I also think it's just useful information. And the corollary of that, the opposite of that, is also useful information in that if you are doing your best to dutifully do something, I got caught up taking the money of parents at a kids club for years, because the person I said I would do it for thought that this would be a really good opportunity. But it wasn't, because I thought I'd get to chat to the parents, but they didn't care. Like, they've got three kids, the church is gonna look after them for free for 2 hours. They're not hanging around to talk to me. So it didn't give me energy and life, so it wasn't motivating. It wasn't tapping into my gifting, because there was a whole pile of admin involved in it, and I'm not great with admin. It didn't feel like I was contributing something meaningful to anything bigger. I didn't enjoy it. You know what I mean? So, but I thought that it was the right thing for me to be doing. But if somebody had given me that list of, if you're doing something that suits you, that you're called to, that is going to fit you like a glove, it's going to have these elements to it, I would have looked at that list and said, it has none of those. And that might have helped me to think, actually, now I can stop. So I wouldn't sort of have that as a list of, I must find all of these things, but more as useful information to say, am I kind of going in the right direction, or am I giving my energy to something that might not be for me? I think church pastors can be very, very good at enthusiastically getting people to do things that don't fit them.
Yep, that certainly can be the case. And I know with most churches, within the operation of it, everything's volunteer based too. So you're all completely reliant upon the congregation. But as far as the community too, it needs to be something that everyone can, I don't know if this is the best use of the phrase or if there's a better way to say it, but if you get something, you get the most of the community to buy in on, then much more people are willing to be able to use whatever their gifts are to fulfill whatever that is. But also within the church context, the pastor, if that's your calling, you're there. Sometimes it's gonna be a little difficult understanding that just because you're there for countless hours a week doesn't mean that the volunteers or anyone else at the church is also going to do the same thing, and that's okay. And before we get too carried away, I do want to mention one thing about my wife. Even though she said, she's felt broken at times because of the calling thing, she's also really great at holding both the tension of not feeling, called anything because she doesn't feel like she quite measures up to what everyone else says or thinks life should be, with also her own value and self-worth and dignity without becoming prideful either. So I say to her credit, she is able to hold all of that in a beautiful tension as well. So I just want to make sure that I give her credit for that as well, because sometimes we're a little I get a little tunnel vision sometimes when we're in the conversation, and I might forget to leave out that really important detail. That to her credit, she does hold all that together very well, and she's an incredible person.
Yeah, I think the key thing, one of the things that you said there that really stood out to me, is her life not measuring up to what other people think it ought to be. Well, that's fine. They don't have the list. And what we regard as calling, often we've got a fairly small list, and then people whose calling doesn't fit neatly into that often feel quite left out. So one of the first podcasts I did was with somebody who used to come and clean for me at home, because I'm a bit naff at it. So it's really helpful to have some support, particularly when my kids were smaller and they were really challenging because of their additional needs. And she was fantastic. She was absolutely brilliant, did a really, really good job. And what she brought into our home for those couple of hours of week of for those couple of hours a week when she came and cleaned was just indescribably beautiful. So I was sort of pondering, because I do, I wonder how you got into this. So I asked her, and she was talking about the fact that she, before she started the cleaning, she'd been trying to do a psychology degree. She'd done lots of other things in her life as well, but she'd been trying to do a psychology degree. She came from a family of high achievers, and she felt that this was the kind of thing that she ought to be doing, but she was really struggling with it. But what she really, really loved doing was cleaning. She found it helpful to her mental health. She just liked doing it. She was really good at it. And so she took the brave step to say, well, actually, this is what I'm going to do. Now, she has a calling. That is her calling, and the way that she exercises it makes a huge difference. And then I did a podcast with someone who's a hairdresser. And again, that isn't top of your list of great Christian callings, but what she does with it is amazing. She's flipping good at being a hairdresser. She does an astoundingly good job. She's got a little salon at the bottom of her garden. And I've gone with my boys, who have found just being in that quiet space really helpful. She has brilliant conversations with people. And when we started our recording our conversation, we'd had a chat where she'd been saying, I've kind of been waiting for God to tell me what I'm called to do. I was thinking, I think you might be doing what you're called to do. But one of my reasons for recording those conversations is because, A, it's really encouraging for those people to think, actually, I think you've got a calling and I think it's significant enough. Let's do a podcast about it, because other people might like to hear. But secondly, for other people to know that's the kind of thing that can be a calling, I think is great. I overheard a conversation between a chiropodist and somebody else last week.
All right, what was that? Between what?
Chiropodist, podiatrist, somebody who
Oh, okay.
sorts out fingernails,
Gotcha. Okay.
and I heard this sentence: I really love ingrowing toenails. I just thought, there is something for everybody. There really is something for everybody. We are all unique. And it's brilliant that she loves ingrowing toenails, because there won't be that many people who are that enthusiastic about that, I wouldn't think. But that's really helpful. So yeah, we're all unique. What we bring is unique, and our ability to know that we are loved is often a journey that we needed to go on. And you were alluding to that earlier, that actually you have needed to go on a journey. It doesn't come with the starter package. I think quite often we think that knowing that we are loved should come with the starter package, along with a clear sense of what it is that God is calling us to do, what is the great important work that the Lord has called me to. And if you don't start with those things, and most of us don't have a really clear sense of how deeply we are loved when we start our Christian journey. If you don't have that, and you don't have this kind of I can put it on my office door job title-y kind of calling, then you can end up feeling second-class citizen. And I would say, absolutely not. Who you are is amazing and unique. And so instead of trying to work out what is my calling, what is my kind of my calling that I'm supposed to be doing that I'm not doing, to actually take a moment to say, if I was to draw a picture of my life in terms of who I am and what I'm contributing to the world, what would that look like? So where is God already at work through me and in me? Where do I sense love for the world? Because I think that's often where we are connecting with the Holy Spirit within us, the stuff that you love, that you delight in, that please you. There will be something in that that is telling you something about who you are already. Because that's the other thing about calling, is it kind of has that sense of it's in the distance, and I'm not there yet. I've got a calling to do this, but it almost implies automatically, but I'm not achieving it yet. And yet God is already blessing and loving the world through who you are. God is already, God's image is already being shown forth through who you are. So noticing that first, I think is worth doing.
Yeah, that's very good. And let me, you said something in there. You mentioned like the cleaning and the garden and something. It just, I find it's interesting to ask people, where do you feel most connected to God? Is it in perhaps just around people, around nature? Is it certain little things in life? Or where do you feel like you're most connected to God?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Absolutely. And there are lots of clues in there. What is really tragic is when people have been part of a culture which has actively encouraged them to ignore that. Like the woman who I met who said that hosting people in her house was just her guilty pleasure. I have met people for whom the very fact that they feel connected and enthused by something makes them think, well, that can't be the thing. That can't be the thing that God's calling me to do because it's fun.
Right. Yeah, that's that is a very unfortunate take that is that the people have that is just it's just not true.
No, it's not true. It's not true.
If God is not just some mean, antagonistic, you better do this or else type of thing. I mean, sure, there are rules that exist, but goodness, truth, beauty, these are the things that should be definitely focused on. And it's one of the things I like about Ephesians chapter 4, whatever is good, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is just, whatever is right. There's a few other lists, but really you could just reduce it down to good, true, and beautiful. And
Yeah.
so that's what I was thinking of. You're talking about the lady who comes and cleans, and even for the one with the garden and plenty of others, like they're just making things beautiful. Well,
Yes.
that is a godly thing that's being done. And maybe that's where we got the idea of cleanliness is next to godliness, but I think that also often reverts back to what we were just saying, where if it's not, it has to be complete organized structure, and these are the very rigid rules that you have to follow this, and that definitely devolves to a point where we don't want it. But yeah, wherever there is, if you're enjoying something, and that goes back to what you were saying, if it energizes you or gives you life, that
Yeah.
is that's definitely if nothing else, a very big clue.
Yes,
For
absolutely.
myself, I have found that in ministry, and it may be even similar to how my wife was talking about her kind of story of not really feeling like she fit in appropriately. I felt like God had called me into ministry. I went off to college, and everyone I talked to says, "Well, I'm gonna do music, or I'm gonna be a missionary, or I'm gonna be a senior pastor of a church, or I'm gonna do this thing or that thing." I'm like, "That is great. All I ever got was just the one word of ministry." And so I was like, I don't really like that doesn't tell me much. And so the journey for me has been it's been very adventurous, where it's, you know what, I'm just going to go where there's an open door, where I can actually do some good. And that's where I'll stay until there's another opportunity to go. And or until I feel like there's this really deep sense of calling where God's calling me to something else. But at a younger age, it was definitely concerning because everyone else had this like definitive, like, I know what I'm doing. And I was like, I have a general idea. I guess I'm going to do what I can. But the other thought I wanted to maybe explore a little bit more with you is perhaps the oh my goodness, I just lost it. Oh, right. So if you are perhaps in a dysfunctional relationship with yourself or with the world or however that may be, I think it's very possible that you're still gaining things that are beneficial. So for example, I mentioned for myself that I was basically spent about 30 years or so having this like dual identity of I am loved, but also I'm not valuable enough. And I found, unfortunately for myself, for quite some time, I found my value in what I could produce and what I could do. And I didn't feel valuable if I had if I took a lazy day or a day that, we used to call that a Sabbath day or whatever. If I took a day off, I just felt useless and I felt like I was not like I failed everyone. And there's like those kinds of things, but it did push me in being productive. It pushed me in academics. Anything that I felt like I could do, it pushed me drastically until now where I'm at the part where I have this freedom that I don't have to feel that my value is linked to what it is I'm able to do or produce or the things I'm able to learn. But through that journey of dysfunction, now that I'm getting to a point of healing, I can take all those things that I have gained over over the last several years and be able to use them appropriately now.
Yeah.
Do you know of anyone, have you experienced that either in your life or in stories of people you know? Does that seem to track with what you know?
I think that happens a lot. I think that happens a lot, particularly for people who end up being real servants, or real producers because they don't have very good self-esteem and self-worth. And I think God is gentle with us. You know, it often takes quite a long time before we are really ready to sort of look underneath the surface at what is it that's driving this behavior. But you can still get a lot of really good stuff out of that. So I have sometimes thought about people, you know, this that you're doing, the drivenness behind it isn't very handy, but actually the skills that you've developed and the resilience that you've got and the ability to work hard, that's all amazing stuff. And I think those things probably could have developed anyway if somebody was healed and whole, and probably it would have been less painful and less driven, and they probably could have taken breaks more often. There are lots of people who would have avoided nervous breakdowns and kind of periods of depression if they hadn't been in that state. But we are who we are, and we can grow through that stuff. So I think celebrate the things which you have learned and developed in those years of pushing yourself perhaps harder than you needed to, because it's still good stuff. You know, it's still diamonds that you've got from it. You might as well make the most of them.
I love that analogy. That's great.
Yeah.
It helps so much to have people in your life who can help you, to support you,
Yeah.
especially if it's a spouse or a family member. So I know my wife is, again, I just can't say enough great things about her. But she will often support me there. So there was a point where, two times in particular, she said, "You're not yourself. You need to do something." And one was a job I was working. It was in a warehouse. It was enough to pay the bills, basically. It certainly was not within my, my calling, or, because ministry is often a very low paid, or if any paid at all, type of endeavor. I know sometimes people get really miss, they see someone, preachers on TV, and they're thinking, okay, yeah, that's what ministry. No. Ministry is
Yeah,
often,
just because Joel Osteen's got a jet doesn't mean you've got one.
right, exactly. But so oftentimes, if someone's a minister, they have to work, another job. And so that's kind of my situation, where I was working a job and they moved to like an assembly line type of process. And my brain is just not wired for that. I stuck it out. I gave it about half a year. And I just was just, zoned out at home at one point. My wife said, "You need to," I was sitting in the kitchen. And my wife said, "You need to do something. You got to make a change, because you're just not yourself. And that's just not okay." And there was another point, maybe a couple of years later, where I had, again, just hit a pretty low point. And my wife was like, you need to go and get some therapy." And whether that ends up with medicine, or whether that's other processes or not, you need to go and get sorted out. And those were not these condemnation from my wife. This is a beautiful, loving support thing, where she says, you need to get help, because you're just not in a good place. And you're also is, because she knows I love being a husband and a father, and she knew that I was not able to be as good of a husband and father as I could be because of some of these extra challenges that were coming, that really did stem from a lot of my childhood issues that were really just kind of coming to a head a few years ago.
Yeah.
But so it really helps to have somebody who can really help to point out where there is some gaps in life and love and giftedness, all of those sort of things. It goes beyond just love and calling and that. But I also noticed, and maybe we're shifting a little bit here, but with my wife and I, we also found that dealing with our son, every parent's going to have a filter that gets, I call the filter gets clogged up. And so you allow so many things to go through, you're able to be fine. And then there kind of becomes a boiling point And my wife and I have always been really good at transitioning. So if I'm starting to get to my boiling point, my level where I'm like, okay, there's only so much more I can take, we will just take turns, and then she'll step in, and I'll be able to go cool off for a bit, and we're able to kind of restructure and resettle, and vice versa too. So, anyways, I know we spun off a little bit there, but those are just some interesting stories I think are helpful, and just the idea that we really need somebody else. No person is or really should be an island. And part of our, and that goes back to your idea of community. Is there a communal aspect to what it is that you're looking to do, or can it help individuals or community, that sort of thing? I really enjoy these final questions I like to have with guests. I think it's a really good way to kind of get to know you, and kind of tie into this idea of charting life, because I am just fascinated by explorers of all kinds. So if you were, let's assume there's an island that has been popped up somewhere, and someone needs to go and explore the island. You're being tapped on the shoulder to do it, and you have five people, living or dead, real people to take with you, with the only caveats is one person to tell your story, and one other person to help you survive the island, and then three other miscellaneous people, however you want to bring. What five people are you bringing with you?
So the person who's going to help me to survive, there was somebody called Hannah Hawkswell who died a few years ago. She ran a farm in the Dales by herself from the age of 35 after everybody else had died. So she was by and she became an unlikely TV star in the UK because people were really fascinated by seeing her running her farm all by herself. And I just think if I need somebody on an island to help make things grow, then that's who I'm going for. Somebody to tell my story. I was tossing up between Sue Monk Kidd and Barbara Brown Taylor because I think they both write brilliantly. I suspect Barbara Brown Taylor's a little bit more extrovert, so I might get some more conversations out of her. I would Victoria Wood, female comedian, makes me giggle a lot. So I think that would just be really, really good to have along. And then Marie Curie, just
Oh, sure.
fantastic, fantastic scientist. But not only a fantastic scientist and thinker, but somebody prepared to work hard. So the discoveries that they made of radium involved her and Pierre shoveling huge amounts of pitch tar, in order to find these little tiny bits of elements that they then refined. But they were basically working in a cold shed for hours, shoveling and shoveling and refining. It was just really backbreaking work, which makes me think that she's both got the brains and might be quite useful.
I would hope
So
so.
I think they would be my people. Although actually the people I would want to take would be my husband and my two boys. I think they would win out of all of the imaginary
Yes.
people.
All right. And on your journey to this island, what crop are you bringing with you to help sustain life, and to or to enjoy?
Potatoes.
Potatoes. All right.
Potatoes, you can get a lot more calories per acre with potatoes. They're really easy to grow. And they're almost a complete food group. So if you've got potatoes and cheese, you've got a complete diet. And I think Hannah will help us to milk something. So I think we're going to have
Yes.
cheese.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. You mentioned potato. That you're the second person who's mentioned some kind of potato. The first, I had a homesteader, a friend of mine, and he said sweet potatoes. So, but anyways, I think that's just kind of an interesting, really good choice there. And if you could spend the next year of your life focusing and improving one aspect of your life, what would that be?
That would be my ability to delight in the thing which I'm doing now. And for me, that is about, underneath that is about love. Being loved by God, loving the world and the people and the incredible stuff that God made. But just there is so much to delight in, Brandon. There is so much. And so delighting in the thing that there is now in front of me here.
No,
That'd be
that is
cool.
it. That's a great one for sure. In life, there can be lots of opportunities presented to us. How do you personally decide which ones are worth pursuing and which ones are maybe shelving?
Do I want to do it is the first thing. Do I think it'll be fun? Is it going to make a difference to the world? Does it fit my personality and my passion? And is it not going to cause a train wreck of other things? So somebody said, "Oh, you could go and work in Massachusetts for 2 years." Well, actually, that would make a train wreck of my family because they don't
Right,
want
right.
to come. So, yeah, but yeah, what do I fancy doing? What will give me life? What will I enjoy?
When was the last time you laughed till it hurt?
I was hosting a retreat last week, and one of the things that we did in the evening was we played a game of Articulate, and it was just very, very good fun. That's the thing, I don't know if you know, it's the thing where you have to explain a word to somebody else without using the word. And
Yes.
yeah, and someone, there were one of the pairs was really, really struggling, and then somebody said that we should do our round with different accents, and that
Yes.
was very, very funny because we discovered that somebody was very, very good at accents. Not only was she very good at them, but she was far more efficient with a Liverpudlian accent than she was in her normal voice. So they started to win, but they only
That's
started to win when they were using accents,
right.
and
Oh,
we all
that's
liked,
amazing.
yes, that was funny.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a game with that same kind of premise, but as far as delivering bad news. And so there's things that are serious and very funny types of bad news where you're trying to describe it and they have to guess what it is. And on the accent, I absolutely love that. I love accents and all the flavors of different styles there. And that just reminds me of a time I was helping out a VBS at my church. And it was something that was like boat, high seas related, something of that nature. And I convinced everyone else that we need to do accents for just pick a different accent that you could, passably do. And because I was supposed to be the ship captain, I was kind of coming with this rough, like not too bad of like this Scottish pirate captain. Like, as long as I remembered my lines, when I forgot my lines, I slipped right back into this Kentucky accent that I have. And so that was, we just had a great time. And that definitely produced a lot of laugh for us as well. When was the last time you were moved to tears?
I easily get moved. It was actually watching some people on a television program who had all been on a race around the world. And had got to know one another quite well during it. And it was just seeing the tenderness of this guy in his 60s listening to this young 18-year-old girl talking about their experiences. And just the love and the tenderness and the softness on his face. And you knew, having kind of followed them, that part of that was about his journey and where he had traveled to as a person. But yeah, I think people growing and changing and having that tenderness and love towards one another, that's a bit of a fatal combination.
And that's definitely something that brings out a lot of strong emotions there. In your opinion, what does it mean to be good?
I think it all comes down to love in the end, and to be prepared to put love for people above other considerations. That's not about kind of being completely a doormat, but I think good people are people of integrity and authenticity and wisdom who are guided by love.
Good. And thank you. That's a slightly different nuance to other answers I've had. So that's one of the reasons why I definitely like these questions. And then the last one would be, let's assume things unfortunately go sideways on your expedition to the island, and you have a very brief amount of room where you can write a letter to your to any friends or loved ones back at home. After you get past the goodbyes and I love yous, what's the last piece of advice you would leave?
I would want to say you are incredible and unique. You are valuable as you are already. Already, who you are is great. So enjoy being you, and trust your instincts. Most of the time, you're probably right.
Good. Again, thank you so much. This has been a very fascinating conversation. We've covered a very wide-ranging bit. So I'm very excited about this. So where can listeners find you, whether it's your podcast or your books or anything else that you produce? I'll go ahead and let you Maybe give you a real quick give yourself an ad or a commercial about it, and then just tell them where they can find you.
I'm not brilliant at ads and
That's
commercials,
okay.
but
I'm not either.
if you've enjoyed listening to this conversation, then there might be other things that I do that you might find interesting. Particularly if you found the stuff about the feminine intriguing, then my book is called Finding God's Feminine Side. You can get it on Audible if you want to listen, or you can find it on Amazon. And everything else, if you just look for lovedcalledgifted.com, then you'll find your way to my website and the Loved Called Gifted podcast. If you've got a podcast app, you can just look that up and you will find it. So lovedcalledgifted.com.
Yep, thank you very much. And again, anything that if this sparked any interest, and you definitely go check out all of her everything she has that she has to offer. And so finally, my goal for each episode in the podcast is to help listeners and for myself as well to think more deeply about the topic, perhaps to think differently, maybe learn something as well, and to get a bit of a laugh or levity for your day. If this episode has done anything at all for that, it would really mean the world to me if you would like and subscribe to it so you can be able to get more of that. But also the commenting helps too. I love to be able to interact with people. So with that, I'm gonna go ahead and sign off here. Thank you very much for listening to Charting Life, and we'll see you in the next one.